I'm so glad you're all able to be with us today for our Coping with the Holidays Pressures and Expectations program. This program is sponsored by the Association of Gastrointestinal Motility Disorders, also known as AGMD. We're a nonprofit organization incorporated in 1991, and we're dedicated to serving all of you patients and your families. For those who don't know me, my name is Mary Angela DiGrazia DiTucci. I'm a longtime patient with multiple digestive motility disorders and other non-digestive diseases. With me here today, I have Melissa Adams Van Houten. Melissa, say hi.
Hello.
And before I begin this program, Melissa is going to be co-facilitating the program with me. And before I begin, I just want to provide a few of the guidelines for our program. And as people come on, I may have to repeat them. But just to remind you that this program is being recorded and will be posted on our website. That's the hope, unless it's a problem with the recording. If you choose to speak, please state your first name each time you speak. And if you prefer not to say your first name and you want to make up a name, please do. Just be consistent. Every time you talk, don't make up a new name because it will confuse me. During the program, we ask that you do not reveal your contact information or request others. Other people for their contact information. If you're interested in communicating with somebody who has spoken on the program, you can always reach out to AGMD directly and we'll see if we can facilitate that. Also, be mindful when you're speaking of the time because we want to make sure that everyone has a chance to speak and be respectful of others as far as using profanity. Please don't. And if you have trouble jumping into the conversation, you can just call out my name, Mary Angela, or you can call out Melissa, and we'll be sure to get you into the program to speak. Melissa, tell us a little bit about yourself, and then I'm going to put the program into your hands.
Okay. Well, I am a gastroparesis patient and advocate. I was diagnosed with gastroparesis in February of 2014. So I've been living with this illness for about 5 years now. And this will be my fourth holiday season with gastroparesis. I would like to tell you that it gets easier, but for me, I'm not sure it has. Maybe emotionally, but not physically. but I did think that this would be a good time to have a holiday call right before Thanksgiving. I know a lot of people with digestive disorders and motilities this time of year have a hard time coping, and especially with Thanksgiving. Thanksgiving and Christmas both, and other holidays that you celebrate, but Thanksgiving in particular, because it just seems to center around the food so much. So we wanted to try to get this call in before people went to their Thanksgiving events, if you're attending, and give you all a chance to talk about some of the things that you find difficult to cope with, you know, physically, emotionally, even financially. Anything you'd like to talk about, share your experiences, how they've changed since diagnosis, or maybe how you cope with the family gatherings and the holidays now. What are some of the differences that you see? Just really anything you would like to speak about. And I can raise some questions if nobody wants to start, but I did want to open it up and just ask you, well, since you're here on the call, you obviously have an interest in the topic. So I would just ask you, what brings you to the program today? What is it you would like to discuss?
Oh, we have a quiet bunch here. It's on 7 minutes.
Oh. I know some of these people online, and they're not always quiet.
Maybe as the program continues on, they'll feel a little bit more comfortable in talking. So, why don't you pose a question? Because I know even in the Massachusetts support group, I had asked them, I had asked the people who attended, what are you doing for the holidays? And I think what I heard from a lot of them was that they were dreading going to places, number one. And number two is that they weren't going and that they were just all alone, mm-hmm. which makes the holidays even more challenging. And I feel for those people if they don't have any family, their friends are all with their families, and they are. And part of the problem is because they're unable to eat. And then the focus can be on them, and it makes it very hard. So, Melissa, when you first were diagnosed with gastroparesis, what were your holidays like prior to that, and then once you had it?
Mm-hmm. Well, I've never been a really kind of holiday person. I have never been overly fond of the holidays. So I can't say that, you know, it was perfect before diagnosis and now it's horrible, because they never were really a time of huge focus for me. But I did always attend holiday gatherings, Thanksgiving and Christmas in my family, and my parents are actually divorced, so I would attend both sets of parents' festivities. And I enjoyed it, enjoyed getting together with my family, and of course loved the meal. I was able to eat anything I wanted, and I found that very enjoyable. Especially my mother was a huge cook, good cook, Southern cook. And so, you know, you'd smell the food when you walked in, and it was so comforting, and we all had a very good time sitting around the table, mostly. And now, of course, that's been taken away. If I do go somewhere, and it's very difficult to go somewhere, I'm fatigued, and I'm frequently in pain, so it's very difficult to get somewhere to begin with. But if I do go, sometimes the smells make me nauseous now. I don't have a huge problem with vomiting. I rarely vomit, but I do get nauseous sometimes when I smell the food. I get fatigued very easily, find that I can't stay very long. And of course, you know, I watch everybody else eating, and it's a very difficult thing to sit there with my cup of coffee and watch everybody else enjoy turkey and dessert. Now, I love my coffee, don't get me wrong, but it is not for me.
And Melissa, how did the family dynamic change once you were sick and you were just having your coffee?
Well, the first thing is that besides making me feel uncomfortable, the first couple of years for sure, besides just me feeling uncomfortable, I found that my family was very uncomfortable too. They didn't know how to act around me because, you know, up to this point, everything is centered around food. So they don't know whether to talk about it or avoid it. They don't know how to include me. They go from, you know, trying to push a few bites of food on me to trying to keep it away from me and hide it from me. Now, they just didn't know how to handle it, and I didn't know how to handle it either. It's a very difficult thing, especially the first couple of years. And, you know, now I've found that for the most part, what's easiest for me is to stay home during the holidays. I've never been all that big on them to begin with, but I stay home with my immediate family now, my husband and my daughter. And if someone wants to come visit me during the holidays, they're welcome to do that as long as they call ahead, because, you know, I don't open my door unless someone has called ahead. But, but But that's pretty much how we handle it. We've done things like we have small groups of people come over, not the whole family anymore. That's just too tiring for me, quite frankly. Too much activity. I'm too fatigued for that. So we'll have just my parents come over, or just my siblings come over, or something like that. Or like one year, I actually went out to Starbucks with my father for our Christmas Thanksgiving event. So, you know, it got me out of the house for a few minutes, but it wasn't around food, and that worked out pretty well. I find that my husband and my daughter, I send them to the holiday gatherings without me a lot of times, because I don't want them to miss out on that family time and those family connections, especially since my daughter's young. That's sort of how I've handled it.
And it's amazing how everybody does change, and what used to be such a big focus on you and your eating and the family and not knowing how to act, as the years pass, it all just becomes a normal part of your life and your lives. Anybody else want to jump in and talk about their experiences with the holidays yet? Not yet. All right, Melissa, do you want to pose another question?
Absolutely. I think what you brought up is a very good point. There are just so many people this time of year who don't have a place to go and are lonely and frustrated and really dreading the holidays. And what you said is echoed online, what I see in the groups. A lot of people talk about how, you know, they used to go to their family things, but they either can't, like I can't, I choose not to, or they're just not invited anymore, quite frankly. Their family doesn't know how to handle them, and maybe they've turned down family invitations in the past, or just sort of drifted away from the gatherings, and so they don't even get invited now. And that is really difficult for people to cope with. I see people posting already in the groups how depressed they are. Everyone around me is celebrating, and you know, I'm here alone. I have no place to go. I don't know what to do. And you know, I'm wondering if that's the case for some of you out there. You know, everybody thinks of this as a merry, jolly time of year, but do you find that you get sad and depressed or lonely and don't have any place to go, even if you wanted to, maybe? Are there any out there in that situation?
No. And you know, we have three people who are trying to get in, and they say that three of us are on the phone waiting. So hold on a minute, Melissa, because I don't know why they're waiting and couldn't just get back in.
Okay.
I may ask them to call in again. Go ahead, Melissa.
This is the first time we've used this system for the call. So if there are glitches, please forgive us. We're trying.
They're trying very hard. Also, for those who do have to venture out, leaving the comfort of your home, it takes courage. It takes courage to go to a family event or friends, a social event, especially during the holidays. And when you're sitting there and you're surrounded by people eating and you're surrounded by food and you're outside the confines of your home, where you can just be yourself, it's really, really hard. And I know when I go someplace, I'm eyeing, where is the bathroom? What happens if I'm going to be nauseous or I'm going to vomit? You know, how am I going to get through this in time? My family has been used to this for so many years. Mine is nearly 40 years of being able to learn how to cope. But I remember those early years, it was really, really tough. really tough. And like Melissa, oftentimes the food can precipitate you feeling even more nauseous than you normally would with gastroparesis if you have gastroparesis. So the challenges are definitely there. Melissa, I'm going to have you take over while I get in touch with these people.
Absolutely. I hear that a lot too. I have some online groups, and this is where I hear a lot of people talking about the difficulties they have during the holidays, just for those of you who don't know. And that's one of the things I hear. You know, I feel awkward taking my own drinks or my own food. Sometimes the host of the event seems insulted by that almost, you know. I spent the whole day cooking this meal, you know, and you're not even going to try it. You're not even going to try a bite, you know. So a lot of people feel guilty about that. You know, they feel bad for bringing their own food, even though their physical situation, the illness is such that they have to do that or they're going to be sick. You know, they can only tolerate certain foods or drinks. And it makes it really difficult and uncomfortable on people. One of the things I've suggested to people is that maybe if you know the host at all, especially if it's family, but even in a situation with work-related events or something, if you know the host, maybe you can contact that person in advance and just say, hey, just to let you know, not go into great detail about your physical situation. You don't have to do that. But just contact her and say, I have some difficulties with eating. I have a digestive disorder, and I'm going to be in a situation where I have to bring my own dish or my own food because there are only certain things that I can tolerate. And really appreciate you hosting this. Really appreciate you going to the trouble of making a big meal for people to enjoy. But, you know, in my personal situation, I'm going to be forced to bring my own drink or food. I hope that's okay with you. Sometimes letting people know in advance kind of softens the blow, because they know what to expect when you're walking in the door, and they maybe aren't so surprised, and their reaction won't be initially, you know, insulted because they already know in advance that you're going to do that. It won't be like you walked in the door and you saw their food and said, no, I'm not going to do that. They knew this in advance. Do any of you find that it's easier or more difficult to bring your own foods and drinks? Is that an uncomfortable situation for you, or is that a workable situation for you? How do you all handle that?
My name is Karen. Can you hear me?
Hi, Karen.
Hi, Karen.
I was formally diagnosed less than a year ago, but I've had severe digestive problems my whole life. So it was almost nice to finally have something officially confirmed. So it's been many years that I've feared family gatherings with food because no one seemed to understand or wanted to understand, because there's been so many other diagnoses in between that, this is pretty complicated. So I kind of dropped out of family gatherings. I've always been anxious around food because I didn't know what was going to trigger what. But now I'm kind of, now that I've got the diagnosis, I feel better about not feeling under pressure that I've got to take care of myself. But of course, I see a therapist every week, so that's helped me a lot for several years now. So she's helped me learn how to cope and learn what my limits are and set my limits. So I think that was the most helpful thing for me, was connecting with those that were going to support me and help me find my voice. So if there is a family gathering, I don't host anything at my house anymore. I haven't for several years. So we go to a family member's house now, and I either take some small thing that I can contribute and I can eat or drink. I find that if I several times a week do like a liquid onlys day, that seems to help calm things down for me, but still you're never quite sure what's going to trigger something at some point. Mm-hmm. So I think for me anyway, being in therapy has helped calm down a lot of my fears about my issues around this, and I don't worry so much about what other people think. Because I'm not a real outgoing person anyway, and most of these family gatherings, there are several people that are more outgoing, and so I'll let them compete for the attention, and I don't mind being a wallflower and sitting back and sipping whatever it is that I've brought, and I just listen, and sometimes I feel better if I go in and do the dishes or I do something helpful, mm-hmm. because I don't want to be out there amongst all the, because I get brain fog and the fatigue really easily. So I don't feel like I can keep up with the conversations and, you know, the football games playing in one room. And so I prefer if I keep myself busy, like I'll do the dishes in the sink, and that way I can be in my own little world. I can kind of be around family, but I'm not in the center of all the confusion and noise and everything.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a really good point, helping with some of the chores. You know, if you could tolerate it, clearing the table or helping clean up with the dishes and stuff after the meal. That's a really good point, because you can still feel like you're helping with something and that you're involved, and yet you know, it's not really centered around the food for a few minutes. That's a good point.
I'm sorry. This is Karen again. I've always been an amateur photographer ever since high school. I took pictures. So I'm usually the person that will pull out my phone and I'll take pictures. I'm never in the pictures, which is fine with me, but I'll take pictures of the group. So I have my small function. And other than that, I'm kind of fine with being the wallflower.
Did you find that it was easier? You say you think it's easier since you've got an actual diagnosis. And do you find it easier to talk to people about, because you can say, you know, oh, look, this is not just me being crazy. You know, I have an actual diagnosis. I have gastroparesis or IBS or whatever. So do you kind of use that as an opening to have those conversations and make you a little more comfortable?
Yes, definitely now, because for so many years, you know, I was labeled as a young child with IBS, and that was just, you know, every time I had a strange other digestive symptom, it was IBS. Oh, there's nothing, it's all in your head, you know, take an antidepressant or something. So now that I have this, you know, that's such a big word, and people are like, oh, there she's coming up with another strange diagnosis, because I have other things also. You know, I was diagnosed with dermatomyositis 13 years ago, and then Sjogren's. So there's a long list of things. So now I just say I have paralysis of the stomach, and they're like, oh, wow. I said, there's a few things that I can eat, and I feel better now that I know. I feel much better now that I know, and I just kind of leave it at that. If they want to ask a few more questions, I'll give them more information, but I just leave it at that. I think I feel more confident now that I finally know, because it's been so many decades of conflicting information and different doctors and try this, try that, that I really feel at peace with this now.
Yeah, having a diagnosis, this is Mary Angela, is empowering, absolutely empowering. Even if what you have there's no cure for or people haven't heard of it, it still qualifies your suffering.
Yes,
and
definitely.
That's so important to the patient.
And it helped, for me, it's helped me find better solutions, because I was just grasping for so many years. Is it lactose intolerance? Is it dairy? Is it wheat? You know, it's every day. It was like, oh, no, that didn't work. It seemed to change all the time. So for me, this is giving me a little bit more guidance, the direction to go to seek solutions that work for me.
Absolutely. Anybody else out there who would like to share your experience, some of the difficulties or some of the tips you have for coping?
Not yet.
Not yet. One of the things that I see also that people have trouble with, at least people I know in the groups, are just the physical demands associated with getting to some of the events, especially if there's travel involved. It's very difficult if you're going long distances, especially, but even just down the street, it's difficult to pack up all your belongings, your food, and, some people are tube fed or on TPN and they have to deal with bringing supplies for that. And it's awkward and difficult, and you get worn out just because you're not eating well. You get worn out, and by the time you go to an event and there's all the activity going on and, you're not used to this kind of activity, maybe the fatigue and the physical demands really get to people. Do you have any tips or stories about dealing with those sorts of just physical demands on you at this time of year, just expectations that you can attend everything you used to attend, even though you're really tired now? Any stories about that or tips?
No, we're quiet travelers here. We travel light.
One of the things I've recommended to people, and I don't know, this helps me. I'm not sure it will help everybody else, but if I am going to go somewhere, I try to really be careful about what I eat the day before I go and the day of, and I try to make sure that I get as many liquids in as I can and as much rest in the day before I go to an event, to kind of ease some of that fatigue that I know is coming the next day. And I will do things like the day of the event. I used to spend I don't know how long doing my hair and picking out the perfect outfit. Those days are gone. The days where I spend hours curling my hair, no, they get what they get. I make myself presentable. I'm clothed, I'm clean, and I show up. But I try to limit some of that preparation as much as I can. And I limit the time I go. I used to be able to go to my dad's house for a New Year's Eve event and just stay up all hours of the night. Well, I can't do that anymore. So, I'll make sure that people know in advance I'm coming, but I'm only going to be able to stay a couple of hours. I'm just too tired. And especially if there's long distance travel involved, I'm just not going to be able to do that. And I try to break up events. So where, I used to maybe go to my mother's house one day and my father's house the next, I try to keep a few days in between the events so that I'm not going out several days in a row. Even if it's only for a couple of hours on those days, I find that if I do several days in a row, I just can't make that. And then I'm breaking promises. I know I told you I would be there, but I went here yesterday and now I'm too tired today and too sick and I can't do it. So I have learned to sort of break those events up.
This is Karen.
That's interesting that you mentioned that, because before I got out of bed this morning, I was putting into my phone and my calendar what day and what time would it be too good to take a shower and wash my hair, because that wears me out for the day. So how am I going to schedule? I don't normally do anything to my hair. I've kept it long now, because if you get it cut short, then you have to go more often to get it cut in a style. So it's just longer and I pull it back in a bun at the base of my neck. I've struggled with that for years, not being able to keep up with my hair. So I no longer, you know, curl it, color it, anything. It is what it is. And so it's still being a little longer, even though it's thin, it still comes out in hands full. When am I going to have the energy to take a shower, get my hair dry? I just let it air dry, then try to pull it back. Am I going to be spent for the rest of the day? Do I do that the night before Thanksgiving and hope I can sleep well and wake up with it looking decent and not have hot flashes that I'm all sweaty and I need to get in the shower again, even though I don't really sweat. I feel clammy. And then have enough energy to get to the event and not just sit there like, I want to go back home and get back in bed. So I was actually putting in my calendar, okay, shower, do my hair, and when am I going to roast the sweet potatoes that I'm going to take that I could eat? So it was really challenging trying to break it all down without feeling like, oh, I'm already exhausted just thinking about putting all these little steps into the calendar. But I do have to break down tasks like that and think about it because I'm, like you said, for so many years, you know, I'd set up times to go someplace and then that time came and I was too exhausted and I just felt terrible all the time for having to break engagements or showing up and being exhausted or angry or frustrated because I was overly tired.
Yeah, so, this is Mary Angela. I just wanted to say that and when you speak of that fatigue, and I call it malaise because it's debilitating fatigue, as well as brain fog, those are two common themes. And I don't know, Melissa, if you have that in your groups, but I know a lot of us do within the organization who have motility disorders suffer with that greatly. And that is total exhaustion. You just do one little thing and it's exhausting. And with the holidays, you end up spending a little bit more energy than you normally would, in some cases a lot. And again, it can be debilitating. So planning out and trying to figure out, well, if I allow for this much for this, and knowing I'm going to pay a price for that, there's always a weighing of the risks of what you're going to do because you just don't know.
Absolutely. I think people on the outside don't understand how much planning it takes. I mean, you can't call me the day before an event and say, hey, you want to come over? No, that's never happening. Never, ever happening. I have to, just as Ms. Karen said, I have to plan things out. It doesn't work like that for me anymore. And even with the best planning, sometimes I'm not going to be able to make it. And people need to know that. They need to know that there's always the possibility that no matter what I do and how hard I try, I may be sick that day and unable to attend. And it's a horrible feeling. It makes you feel guilty. You worry that you're going to anger the people that were expecting you or that they're not going to believe you were really that sick and you just went out of the event. Now, there's all sorts of horrible feelings that go along with that. And, you know, sometimes even now, I kid myself. You know, I'm sitting behind my computer at my desk and I don't feel all that bad. I'm just sitting in a chair. So I plan all sorts of things thinking, oh, I'm fine, you know, and then I can't make it because I underestimated the fatigue and just the effects of the busy season on my body. It's really hard to think realistically and plan things out, but you have to do it. You really do to take care of yourself.
Yeah, Melissa, this is Mary Angela. We have some more people that have come on. Some people are still having difficulty. Karen, when you came on, did you come on by phone or computer?
I'm using my iPad. I just, when you sent the email stating that I had sent my registration in, I put that link directly in my calendar. So I clicked on the link this morning and discovered I didn't have this particular app on my iPad, but it very quickly downloaded and I just clicked the link to start up. It was very smooth. I can't sit at my computer anymore. I just can't do that. I told my husband, you know, I'm getting ready for this. I'm going to sit in my recliner with my pillows and my earphones on, and this is what I plan to do this morning.
Well, I'm glad that you're here and everyone else is. We have a few people who are still trying to get on. They're using the iPad. They've tried the iPhone, and they're still having trouble. So I'm just trying to figure out why, and I wonder if it has something to do with the downloading of the program, because everybody else is not having a problem. For those of you who have just come on, welcome. If you would like to jump into the conversation, my name is Mary Angela DeGrazia DiTucci. We have Melissa Van Houten, and we are talking about the holidays here. So if you would like to jump in and join in the conversation, if you could just say your first name, and every time you speak, that will be helpful. Then we can identify who's speaking with the voice. The other thing that Melissa is, that I hear a lot of is, and I know I experience this myself, self-expectation. You expect that you should be able to power through things. You expect that you need to do shopping for the holidays. You need to attend events. You need to do this, that, and the other. And oftentimes, we don't meet those expectations that in our mind we say, oh, you can do it, or you have to do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's my personal problem. So
yeah, I knew it was.
Difficult things, you know, just accepting that not your family accepting, but you personally believing that there are really physical limitations associated with your illness that you cannot get past. You cannot wish that away, and you cannot will that away. Believe me, if it could have been willed away, I would be cured by now. Because I have all sorts of motivation and will. But no matter what you do, you cannot make the illness go away. And that's a very difficult thing to accept. Because if you don't accept that, you are constantly frustrated and disappointed with yourself, and you're going to feel constant guilt and disappointment. But if you allow yourself, and I'm preaching to myself here too, believe me, because I promise you, this is my biggest sin. But if you allow yourself to really believe and understand that you are doing your best, and that there really are going to be things you are going to have to change, changes you are going to have to make that are significant. If you allow yourself to accept that to some extent, then it really eases a lot of that burden. And you don't, it's not that you don't push yourself, it's that you don't push yourself beyond what is absolutely reasonable. I mean, I could barely keep up with some of these things before diagnosis. I don't know how on earth I expect myself to do it since diagnosis. But we kid ourselves, you know, we don't want to disappoint people, and we don't want to disappoint ourselves. So we kid ourselves, but it's there and it's real. And we have to deal with it.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
This is Karen. I know that I am very fortunate to have met my husband in 2004, and he has been so, so supportive. And in 2010, I actually had to leave the workforce because I just was sick constantly. I was on immunosuppressants, and I was just sick all the time with terrible infections. So I'm very fortunate that I don't have to work outside the home. But before I met him, and I can't believe he wanted to get involved with me, because I was already, you know, had digestive issues and and things, but I just feel so for those that have to still be in the workforce. It's so hard to get insurance and to protect yourself that I just don't know how people that have to still work full time for their insurance coverage can possibly get through the day. So I feel very grateful that, and I try to remember that when I start beating up on myself about not being able to get to as many things. One doctor's appointment, that's it, I'm done for the day. Or, you know, going out to do a little bit of walking in the grocery store, this isn't a great day, I need to cut it short. But again, I'm fortunate that I'm not having to be out there every single day and push myself, because I've been through that and I just could no longer do it anymore.
I think, Melissa, that and Karen, thank you for that. So many of us in this group who are here today have been blessed with wonderful spouses or partners, and those who don't have that, extremely hard. The guilt that patients can have is huge, because instead of you contributing to finances, you end up being the cause of extra financial worries. And when you have two people who are working and then it boils down to one, and oftentimes that one person that is working, because perhaps you're constantly hospitalized and then the attendance of that only one that is working, it gets affected. The financial strain is huge. And during the holidays, it's enhanced even more so, because you have the expectation that you have to give a gift to people. And it just adds to that guilt for many people.
Yes, it does. And, you know, it's easy to advise people, well, just don't give gifts. You just have to tell people you can't give gifts this year. And of course, you know, that's good advice. But it's hard when people are giving you gifts, even if they're saying to you, I know you can't give out gifts this year. I understand your medical bills are high. You're unable to work. You're in dire straits financially. I want you to have this gift. It's, you know, we don't expect anything in return. Even when that's the case, you feel guilty because you want so badly to get them something too. You obviously care about these people and you appreciate what they're doing for you, and you want to reciprocate, and you cannot, or, you know, you go bankrupt. Mm-hmm. And that's very difficult. You feel guilty about that. You know, I've advised people many times, give homemade gifts, or give up your time if you can, or buy very small things from like a dollar store or some kind of local charity. Just something to let people know that you've thought about them. You know, my daughter does stuff like writes poems or songs for people, and, you know, she's a child. It's maybe a little easier for her to get away with, but, you know, there are creative things you can do. But it still doesn't feel the same as putting that nice store-bought gift that they said they wanted in their hands. It's really difficult not to feel guilty about that.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. There are so many other aspects of trying to cope through these holidays. And that's even not being believed by people. Even though you're sick, even though you've said it to people, there are some people who you may be spending the holidays with who don't get it. They don't understand how sick you really are. They don't believe it. Maybe they've never heard of what you have, and they're judging you by how you look. They're judging because perhaps you're able to drink coffee, but you can't eat. Does that make sense? So these are some more factors that people have to deal with, especially it's heightened again during the holidays. Anybody have experience with people not believing them? Anybody want to talk? No.
Hi, this is Debbie.
Hi, Debbie. Welcome.
Hi. Sorry, I missed the first part of it. It's not necessarily people don't believe what's wrong with me as much as people thinking that they have the answers. Well, what if you just tried this? Or what if you just tried that? Or can't you just have this, you know? And it makes me want to stay away only because I don't want to keep saying, look, I'm not going to eat while I'm here. I'll wait until I go home because I will be in the bathroom for the rest of the day. You know, I don't want to have to keep explaining that over and over and over and over. And everybody, you know, giving me that I feel so sorry for you kind of look, you know.
It's really, really hard. Really hard. But you hit upon a very sensitive spot. And that is people thinking they know best.
Yeah.
What's going to help you out. And interesting enough, I have found that even patients who suffer from digestive motility disorders sometimes do that as well to other patients. You need to try this. This worked for me. And and it's, you know, for some patients, they welcome it. For other patients, it's like, don't you think that if I really wanted to get better, I would try these? Or perhaps, you know, I have an allergy or sensitivity to something. Or perhaps it's a therapy that's, they really don't believe in that type of therapy. So you have all of these factors. What works for one patient may not necessarily work for another. And I think I say that almost every day with this organization, keeping that in mind. Very individual.
Well, and what has been particularly challenging for me this year is I had a full colectomy in March. And so I have both gastroparesis and I had colonic inertia. And so now I'm having a real difficult time recovering from the colectomy. They did it with anastomosis. Mm-hmm. And I am still doubled over in pain every time I eat. So with me, when I can eat, it goes right through me, you know, where I used to spend three. I'm sorry about my dog. Hold on.
Oh, no, then your dog has something to say, too.
Me, when I can eat, I'm in so much pain. And like I said, I'm in the bathroom the rest of the night. And it's like you don't want to do that when people are, you feel like people are watching your every move, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's hard. It's very hard. And I'm so sorry that you're having difficulty with that.
That's a good point, what she said about people watching your every move. I hear that talked about a lot in the groups this time of year. I go and they watch what I eat and watch every bite I take. Now, I've decided what I'm going to do in advance, how much I'm going to eat. I'm going to splurge this day. I know it's going to make me sick, but that's the choice I've made. And so they get harassed about that. You know, I thought you were sick. Should you really be eating that? Do you think you need another bite of that pie? You know, and then afterwards, when they do get sick, I'm like, no, they're going to get sick. Then it's, I don't know why you do that to yourself. I mean, this was a bad decision. And just all sorts of judgment. You know, I don't think people understand how difficult it is to avoid the food that you used to enjoy. And I don't know hardly anybody who never, ever makes the choice or doesn't make the choice to eat something they shouldn't. We all do that. We all have
slips. We all have moments where I haven't had this for a year and I am going to take this bite if it kills me. Because we're human and we miss those things. And people just have so little understanding of what that's like. They think that because they fasted one day or went on a diet for a week, they understand what it is to go without food. But they don't understand because there is no light at the end of the tunnel for us. It isn't, you know, 1 week and of not eating and then I can eat again. It's the rest of your life, potentially, short of a cure or a good treatment. You could be facing this the rest of your life. And they don't understand how different that makes the situation.
Absolutely. It is. That's really, really challenging. And I think that there are two points. One is that oftentimes for those who have a motility disorder and they're very thin, how many of you hear people go, oh, what diet are you on? I wish I was that then. And if they only knew the story, you know, if they only knew what was behind the scenes. And then there are those who are obese or a little bit heavy or average weight. And people say, I don't get it. You don't look sick. You look fine. Why can't you eat this? So they still don't understand. The other thing is that the emotional roller coaster that comes into play when you have these motility disorders. Remember, everything revolves around food and bathroom. That's part of life. And those are the two areas where we struggle most with. And so that mourning process, even if you think, ah, I've got this down, I can accept this loss. One incident, a word that somebody says, be it a doctor, be it a family member, be it an outsider or a friend, can trigger all those emotions to come back and you go through that mourning process all over again. Even the fact that somebody may know you're sick and then they go and offer you food, you know?
Yeah.
They know you can't eat it. Here, have some.
Yeah, see, in the beginning, I was a gainer and I gained more weight than I have ever had in my life. And then I got, like, somebody flipped a switch and I lost 130 pounds. And I remember last summer, my mother-in-law said something to me like, oh man, you look incredible. And I was just like shocked that she would say that. First of all, because I don't look good. I look sick. And then my sister-in-law turns around and snipes at me and goes, yeah, but was it worth it?
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
And so, you know, in 2 days, I get to go sit with these same people. And it's like stressing me out so badly because I don't even know if in 2 days I'm going to be able to tolerate this smell. Forget about eating, you know?
Yeah, that aroma of food, you know, where it was enticing before, can really be a problem. And some people actually have to cook for the holidays who have motility disorders, and that's tough. And then they have to serve and do all of that. The difficulty.
How do you cook without tasting?
Oh, I've mastered that.
I thought I had, and I haven't cooked much in the last year and a half. And about a month or so ago, I was cooking, and I thought, you know what? It's not making me sick to my stomach. I'm just going to have one bite. 3 days I suffered from one bite, you know? So I told my husband, I can't cook anymore. I'm obviously not strong enough emotionally not to take that bite that I know is going to make me suffer, you know?
Yeah.
Difficult thing.
The other thing is that I think is so important, even if you have support, but especially if you don't, if you find that you feel very much alone, and during the holidays you find yourself sinking into the depths of depression, or you have a lot more anxiety, get help for it. Talk to people. Talk to others who understand. Seek professional help. We're getting rid of that stigma that, oh, you have to be strong and get through everything on your own. That's so not true. I think the heroes are the ones that realize they need help, and then they take that step to get help. I know during the holidays, that depression level escalates with so many of our members. Melissa, do you find that in your group too?
Absolutely, absolutely. Anxiety, depression, just a sense that they want to go into a hole and not come out. You know, they just want it to be over with. I just actually talked about this recently. They have a fantasy of how the holiday should be, and then there's the reality, and it doesn't match anymore. And it's a very difficult thing to accept. You want somebody to come in, and these are your friends, your family. You know, they should understand, and you want them to understand. You want them to say, hey, you're still important to us, and we're really sorry that you're struggling. And they don't deliver on that sometimes. And so you feel forgotten and worthless. And, I find that we're constantly telling people in the groups, do you have anybody you can speak to, a counselor, a pastor, a close friend, even a counseling hotline, or sometimes a suicide hotline, because these feelings can get out of control very quickly, and you have to be on top of the warning signs for sure.
We only have about one or two more minutes. Anybody want to elaborate on what we've talked about, or want to talk about another aspect that we haven't covered within this program? We must be very thorough here.
We are. Yes.
I think we covered everything. A lifetime of the problems of holidays.
We have solved every problem out there.
I just think, and Melissa, if you want to speak, and then I'll close the program, if you have any last words.
Yeah, I do. I mean, I think above all else, what I would say to people is, you know, this may not be the best time of the year. Even if it were before diagnosis, it may not be now because of some of the changes that have occurred. But I think it can still be a good time. You know, if you let go of how it used to be to some extent, and you think about how it can be now, and try to plan the best possible holiday based on your limitations, I think you can still find it enjoyable. And what I would say to you above all else is, you know, you feel guilty sometimes, and you feel alone and anxious and weak, quite frankly. And you should never, ever have to feel that way, because nothing that has happened here is your fault. You are not responsible for the changes that have occurred. And if people can't accept these changes in you, then maybe they're not people that you should really worry about anymore. Let go of those expectations that other people have for you, and try to minimize the expectations you have on yourself. You are not obligated to participate in everything that you used to participate in the exact same way as you used to participate. Your life is different, and it can be good, but it is different now.
Beautifully stated, Melissa. And in closing, I just want to, first of all, thank all of you for coming in. I'm sorry, some people were having difficulty, and we'll get to the bottom of that. But I also want to say, and I truly mean this, because I actually do this, during the holidays that take place within my family, as I sit there at the table drinking my tea, while everybody else is eating, What I am doing is I reflect on each and every one of you. And I'm right there with you in heart and thought. So you're not alone. Because after nearly 40 years of going through a life of motility disorders, I truly understand. And as I close every program, you are the heroes. You are the true heroes. Because every day it takes insurmountable courage for you to live and get through your days and the holidays. And may God bless you. May this holiday be one of your better ones as you journey through motility disorders. Thank you so much for attending. And again, God bless you all. Take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you,
Melissa.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.